Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times bestselling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is Welcome to Florida, our first episode of 2024. Craig, this is our fifth season already.
Wow. We should celebrate. Where's my kazoo?
We started in 2020, so this begins our fifth calendar year, our fifth season. And as you like to do on your weekly column at FloridaPhoenix.com, you've got some resolutions for folks you're hoping do a better job in 2023. And the one you start
2024.
With... 2024. I'm sorry. I've got to get used to that. The one you start with is something that... we should spend some more time with on the podcast. It's one of these, you know, it happens sort of around the holidays, so it kind of got overlooked. But you call out the State Department of Transportation head and just an unconscionable.
It was
gift.
Stupid. You can say that. It was just stupid. Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Jared Perdue, the DOT secretary, became the only state official in the United States to turn down federal money to be spent on curtailing tailpipe emissions. And you know, that's as part of the...
49 said yes, one said no.
49 said, so even, you know, places like Texas said yes to taking this money.
Oklahoma, yeah. The darkest of dark red right-wing loony bin states said, sure, we'll take this money from the federal government to improve air quality.
Florida said no. It's all part of the federal act that's supposed to counteract climate change.
Okay.
And he said no to taking these millions of dollars and said, you guys are politicizing the roads, which is just a silly thing, number one. But also, I'm sorry, you're the one politicizing it. The feds are offering you millions of dollars.
You say money. I mean, this is hundreds of millions.
Yeah, hundreds of millions of dollars to make the air better. The DOT, Florida DOT, had actually drawn up plans and posted them on their website saying we're going to provide for more long distance trucker parking so they won't have to drive so much. Mm-hmm. We're going to build more roundabouts because those are better for the environment than stoplights where cars have to sit and idle. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a bunch of other things that they already had the plans. They were already going to spend the money. And then the DOT secretary says, no, we're not taking the money. And they had to scrub the website and make all that stuff go away. And it's just stupid. That's Florida taxpayers paid money. Then we're going to get it back. Oh, no, we don't want it. I mean,
right. This is money. No strings attached from the federal here. 300 some odd millions of dollars to reduce carbon emissions
pollution.
Air pollution from tailpipes. And our genius Department of Transportation head at you have to imagine the orders of the governor saying, no, you're politicizing somehow air pollution. Obviously, the Department of Transportation and DeSantis are 100% aligned and in bed with the fossil fuel industry because he needs their money to support his sunken presidential campaign. And as a result, Florida taxpayers, Florida citizens, Florida residents don't get an opportunity at this money and cleaner air.
Well, and I didn't mention this in the column, but, you know, air pollution is where we get some of the nitrogen and phosphorus that's going into our waterways and causing pollution of the waterways that then mm-hmm. stimulates the growth of toxic algae blooms. So, you know, there's all kinds of good reasons to take the money.
People with emphysema air pollution is one of those, like, you know, doesn't get the attention of breast cancer, obviously, or leukemia or car accidents. But on the down low, air pollution is one of the leading causes of death in the world.
Yeah. And just to say no to this stuff is just crazy. So I proposed a New Year's resolution to say the next time the feds offer me millions of dollars for cleaner air, I will take it and say thank you.
And Craig has some other resolutions for state politicians and
local politicians.
Local
too,
politicians, yeah. Developers, the Florida Panther gets a mention. Check that out, FloridaPhoenix.com. All right, Craig, today's guest is a repeat offender, so to speak. Lou Vickers helped organize one of what I know is your favorite episodes from the archive, episode number 100, which included Lou and an original Weeki Wachee mermaid.
Yeah, who was 92 when we interviewed her. And man, she was a pistol, too. But for this one, I've been wanting to do this subject for a while about Dick Pope and Cypress Gardens, because Dick Pope in his lifetime was actually known as Mr. Florida. Mm-hmm. He didn't invent Florida tourism, but he sure perfected it.
Yeah.
And Lou has written the book about Cypress Garden. So I think she's the perfect person to tell us about.
Yeah. Dick Pope is the subject. He founded Cypress Gardens, like the moniker Mr. Florida. He's also known as the father of Florida tourism. Lou Vickers is our guest. And when we think about Florida and that ever elusive old Florida, boy, Craig, if there's anything more iconically, stereotypically, archetypally old Florida than Cypress Gardens, you'd have to tell me, because I mean, I think that's it.
Exactly.
Lou Vickers is the guest. Dick Pope is the subject. Here we go.
Lou, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And this is such an important topic. And I think a lot of people in Florida don't really know how significant Dick Pope was or Cypress Gardens was. Mm-hmm. At its height, how popular was Cypress Gardens? How big was it?
Okay. In 1963, Cypress Gardens tied with the Grand Canyon as the number one tourist attraction.
Incredible.
It was
That's
huge.
Amazing.
And back, even back in the, you know, when it really got going in 30s and 40s, you know, it was just packed, you know, which is remarkable because we're talking about a garden.
Yeah. But a lot of celebrities visited too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Elvis, apparently, there's a video. I mean, there's a photograph of Elvis on skis. Carol Burnett was there. Mm-hmm. Johnny Carson filmed the show there. That was his own. Johnny Carson filmed his only ever out of studio show at Cypress Gardens.
Wow.
And while he was there, he skied on top of the bodies of these two guys. You know, they were his skis.
Amazing.
Well, I certainly want to get into the history as kind of the global center, the world capital of water skiing. But to sort of lead into Craig's question a little bit more, it opens January 2nd, 1936. Was it instant? I mean, this is the Depression area. Was it instantly popular? This is pre-interstates. Or did it take years and decades to sort of evolve into, like you said, a tourist attraction on par with the Grand Canyon?
Well, no, I think it was crowded from the beginning, but the date of the opening is he had like five or six different openings.
Okay.
I couldn't.
And how Florida is that?
He had grand opening in 1935, the grand opening in 1936. He had all these grand openings because he was a master of getting the word out and creating buzz around things. Mm-hmm. And so the openings were like, oh my God, how many openings did he? I could never say exactly when it opened. Okay. Cypress Garden started though as what he called a public venture. Okay. And he actually got money from the Canal Commission down there somewhere in 32, when he came back, because he had been away from Florida for a little bit. And he got money to create this public garden and to take people out on the boats, you know. And then they figured out, and he also got WPA money. He got the guys out there building the place for $1 a day. And he had to pay the Canal Commission back because they figured out this is a private venture. You know? a lot of what Dick Pope did in the beginning was real estate. Okay. In the 1920s, you had the Florida boom. And so his father was a big like real estate magnate, you know, the Haven Villa Investment Company. And so in the 20s, during the Florida boom, they were bringing people down and Dick Pope would take them out on boats and let them see, you know, the place. And then he was able to sell real estate doing that. And so they would stage like regattas. They had a little clubhouse out there on the lake and they would stage regattas out there and they would have people coming down and that's how they would sell real estate to them. So the boom ended and then Dick Pope actually took a like advertising job with the Outboard Motor Company, you know, Johnson Motor Company and Outboard Motor Company Association. He had accounts with Janssen and Champion Spark Plugs. All of his ads, even though he was up in New York and Chicago, all of his ads featured parts of Florida. You know, he would have his brother out on a boat in the lake in Florida because they were still pushing real estate, you know. Mm. And so when he came back to Florida and he bought that piece of land, he bought the first 12 acres of what would become Cypress Gardens. Basically, his idea to make this public garden was to sell more real estate, you know.
Of course, it's all about the real estate in Florida. Who was he? Where did he come from? I mean, you mentioned his dad, but yeah.
He claims he was born in the middle of a cyclone in Iowa, you know. He came from this family, I think, was pretty well off. His father was like a millionaire, you know, and mm-hmm. during those early days, you know. And so by the time Dick Pope, when they moved to Florida, Dick Pope was working at his father's real estate office when he was 16 years old. And they had their hands in all kinds of stuff, fertilizer, avocado farming, you know. But Dick Pope was always like, I don't know, he was just way before his time in terms of his creativity and his ability to get attention and publicity, you know.
He was a hustler.
He was totally, totally a hustler. He was amazing, really.
And when was the family's efforts in Florida always centered around that Winter Haven, you know, kind of Lakeland area?
Yeah, it was mostly like the Winter Haven, like Polk County. And Polk County was known for having like the most millionaires at that time in the 20s and stuff. And a lot of it was real estate, orange groves, you know, orange was king at that time. And so orange groves, a crazy place. There was a guy that guy from Eatonville told Zora Neale Hurston that if you want to hear some big stories, go to Polk County. You know? He said to her that the water drinks like cherry wine up there, you know.
Oh my.
It was known for being like this oversized kind of, you know, over the top kind of place. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, where did Dick Pope get the idea for a garden? From a public garden as a tourist attraction?
Well, I think he noticed there were like other places. There was some place in Charleston, I think, that had a garden that was drawing mass crowds and stuff. So I think he got the idea from that. And he said he wanted, so what he did when he was creating this garden and selling it to the Canal Commission down there and to the local authorities, you know, he said he wanted to out Venice, you know. I mean, that's what he was saying. But he, so they had the canals, you know, and you would never be able to do that today to build the canals through that area.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so he basically got it done pretty much for free through WPA, a dollar a day. He just thought that would be a good way to bring people in. And the skiing and the Southern Bells came later, you know. But he didn't just have the garden. He would have events, you know, like – he must have crowned like 1,000 queens. You know, he would crown a queen. Apparently, he crowned 10 queens in one day.
Wow.
He would call the newspaper and say, we're going to crown a queen today. Send the newspaper over. And so they would come over and they would crown the cigarette queen, the daffodil queen. Every flower there was a queen.
Because it made for good publicity. Well, yeah, and they get, yeah.
And so he knew how to, well, you know, newspapers back then wanted, you know, they wanted interesting things like that. And so he would create these moments to have them come out there. He would wake up and say, what can we do to get the press out here?
But it was really his wife who had the horticultural gardening experience, not him, correct?
Well, no, I think it was between the two of them, you know. Okay. She may have had more, but he was able to, I don't know, he was able to get things done, you know. He would be like, he had a story about, they have this huge banyan tree there. He claims that he got it for like $350 from a friend. And he was talking about Disney World has their banyan tree, which was fake, you know, but they had to pay a lot of money, millions of dollars or however much money it was when they built that banyan tree. And Dick Pope's like, I got mine for $350, you know. But he knew how to do the gardens. And the story goes is that when he laid it out, that he, you know, used his hands like a viewfinder. He wanted every square inch of Cypress Gardens to be photographable. Okay. Yeah. Because he was a big believer in photography. At one point, I think they had like 20 photographers on staff, you know.
Wow.
They had their own photography team. And then his archives were insane. And I went down there. It was after one of the hurricanes. After, you know, he was gone and the guy from Wild Adventures had bought it. The archives were this room just packed with, he photographed literally everything. He photographed himself. He had himself photographed when he was in the hospital having an appendectomy.
Wow.
Because he was laying in bed. He was wearing a Janssen swimsuit in bed.
Of course he was.
He had himself photographed. He had himself photographed when he went into the Army in 1942. He was in charge of doing telephone pole stuff, and he's on top of a telephone pole holding Florida oranges. Now, the thing, it said, he sent it back to his wife. It's like, Julie, send us to the Sentinel. Say that Dick Pope is still selling Florida oranges. So he mixed all his enterprises were just layered in together, you know. Yeah.
Well, now there's a story you tell about his wife and the water skiing shows. Tell us about that.
Yeah,
and
so the wife, so what happened is the skiing thing, first of all, starts with aquaplaning. Okay, so before there were water skis, there were aquaplanes. And so that's like a board, you know, that's pulled behind a boat. Okay, mm-hmm. So Dick Pope and his brother Malcolm would get out there and do this aquaplaning. And that was part of the, they would get the newsreels to come down and film them doing that. And that was a way of, again, selling real estate, you know, to show the properties and stuff. So they were doing that. So it wasn't until the 20s, like 22, and the dates on that are confusing because there were two or three different people that claimed they invented water skiing. So in the 20s, water skiing was invented. And at that time, they were just playing around on the lake. The kids were skiing, okay? But Julie had a photo sent to the newspaper of the kids skiing by Cypress Gardens just to try to get people to come out there. Mm-hmm. And the soldiers, this was in the 40s. This happened in the 40s. Some soldiers saw that, and they called her and said, when is the ski show? There was no ski show. But she said, it'll be this afternoon, you know, kids out there doing it. And that was the beginning of the ski show, right? And so then they started manufacturing their own skis later. You know, they had a whole ski business, you know? Yeah.
Well, and that's how I know Cypress Gardens, because my parents in Wisconsin were water skiers, and I'm sure I learned how to water ski on Cypress Garden little 4-foot water skis in Wisconsin. Yeah. You know, they were in their 20s in the 60s, so they would go down there from Wisconsin for the shows and skis, and they were big into it. And some of my earliest memories are those, you know, mass produced Cypress Garden water skis that I learned to ski on at 10, 11 years old.
Well, he got a lot of skiers from Wisconsin. Willa Cook McGuire was one of those skiers that came from Wisconsin. She was a world champion skier. And so the skiing really, really evolved. In fact, Dick Pope is really responsible for the water ski boom, really. Mm. And I think he was covered in many magazines on the skiing. His skiers made the covers of Life magazine multiple times, you know, whole big features and stuff.
Yeah, and they're doing the big jumps and the pyramids,
the stunts,
But it wasn't
it
wasn't just for fun, because they started doing the international ski championships, and they would do them at Cypress Gardens. And then his skiers, like Willa Cook, who came down, they would send them overseas. And so there was this international component to the ski thing at Cypress Gardens, this whole water ski boom. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why Cypress Gardens is so interesting to me, because they had so many international skiers come there. They had a guy from Mexico that saw a newsreel of Cypress Gardens skiing, and then he came up to Alfredo Mendoza, you know, he came up to Cypress Gardens to ski there because he saw a newsreel, you know, and that's how they would get people to show up, is they would, and all his skiers, like Willa Cook was an international women's champion skier, you know.
And all these people are young, they're attractive, they're fit, it's Florida, you're watching these newsreels in, you know, again, like Wisconsin, Chicago, New York, wherever, in December, January, February, there's 3 feet of snow on the ground, and they're in Florida, it's gardens and beautiful people, and it's sunny. I mean, the you know, for folks like Craig, who probably understands it to some extent now, you know, you have no idea the hold those images created in people's minds of wanting to make this exodus to Florida, if not for a lifetime, at least for a week or a weekend.
Right. Yeah. So you had people coming from all over the country. So Winter Haven was interesting because of that, because there were so many, like I said, so many people from other countries living there. And then, like I said, most of his skiers would go overseas. And so they were getting exposed to international travel. And Dick Pope always said that, you know, if you do international travel, it just broadens your world, you know, so yeah. much. And he was a big believer in travel and all that, you know. So he was able to bring that to those skiers, some of those young people, you know.
How much was he charging people for admission around this time?
It wasn't very much. Like, I think in the beginning it was like 35 cents or something. It was small admissions, you know.
How was he making money? Was he making money with the skiing endorsements?
Well, I think what he was still doing was advertising. So he would have, like, Chevrolet wanted to do an ad, so he would bring them over there. So he was selling location stuff. That's part of it. And it might have been more. It might have been a dollar or whatever. But he was also, if you look at ads, like Dick Pope was selling his place. Like, he was, like, there's orange industry. Like, they would have picture of a water skier holding oranges, you know. When Esther Williams came, and he had a big thing with Esther Williams, like, he built her a couple of pools, not just the Florida pool. He had Esther Williams out in an orange grove picking oranges.
Wow. You know, but now tell people, a lot of people won't know who Esther Williams is. I know, but
she was a superstar. She started as a swimmer, you know. Mm-hmm. And she made the leap into film. You know, Esther Williams on an island with you was filmed at Cypress Gardens. You know, parts of it were. That was one of her first films. Easy to Love was filmed. Easy to Love was almost like, as Dick Pope said, it was like a 2-hour-long advertisement
for Cypress Garden.
Yeah, amazing. Because it was ostensibly the characters was him and her, you know, and the guy that played her love interest. Of course, they were never had a love interest or anything, but. Esther Williams did a lot of things for Dick Pope. You know, she did, like I said, On an Island with You was filmed there. And while she was there, you know, she went over and visited the high school and hung out with the kids. And a lot of the kids were extras in the film. She filmed this crazy hour-long TV show there in this other pool he built her. He built her this pool, like a regular pool, but it had windows in the side so they could film.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And so she made that film there. It was like you can probably find it online. It's kind of weird because it's like a beer. You can't tell where the beer ad ends and where the TV starts. You know, it's like this blend of.
You mentioned the Florida pool. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah. So Dick Pope built this pool in the shape of Florida. Okay. And he was told it's not going to work, you know, because he built it into the lake. It's built on the edge of the shore and it juts out into the lake. And he built it for Esther Williams for that film, Easy to Love. And they made a lot of scenes in that. And his theory about that was, yeah, it's going to cost me a lot of money to make it, but we're going to use it like 4 million more times in ads and everything. He would fill it with oranges. You know, he would have all the swimmers sitting on the edge. And this one guy I talked to, Dick Pope had 100 women sitting on the edge of the pool in their swimsuits, and it was filled with oranges. And this was for an ad, you know, or a postcard or something. Mm-hmm. But one of the swimmers was a guy. Because he didn't have enough women. So this guy named Bob Keogh was like the CFO or the company or something. Bob's like, yeah, he had me out there in a swimsuit. In fact, the guy, Alfredo Mendoza, that was the skier from Mexico, he was the double for Esther Williams.
Wait, how did that work?
Pictures of him in a swimsuit and her outfit. But he did the jumps in that film, you know.
Uh-oh, don't tell the governor.
I can't tell the governor, you know. He'll go bad, Easy to Love.
Who were the Southern Bells?
Okay, the Southern Bells, and that got started too. That wasn't originally part of the thing. Apparently there was a freeze there in the 40s. There was a freeze in Florida, and it froze all the garden stuff, you know, the flowers and stuff. And so Julie, they did have costumes in there. They had Southern Belle costumes for photo shoots and stuff. And so she got the girls to put on those Southern Belle outfits and go stand outside the garden to let people know that we're still open, even though, yes, there's been a freeze. And it just became a thing. You know, then people wanted to get pictures with the Southern Belles. And so the Southern Belles became a fixture at that point. And so that's how that got started. So
And you interviewed a black woman who was a
yes she was a when I went down there I went back down there after Cypress Gardens it sold multiple times. Okay, it was in in flux for a bit. And finally, the Lego people bought it. So I went back down to finish. I had to go back down and kind of rewrite the ending of the book. And there was a black Southern Belle, you know. Plus, a friend of mine, I can't remember her name, but she had taken some photos of these Southern Belles, and they were black, you know. And I asked her, I'm like, ooh, I said, well, what do you think about being a Southern Belle? And she goes, well, it's better than working at CVS. And I said, well, I said, you do know the whole thing about Southern Belle. She goes, yeah, my parents aren't really that happy about it. But for her, it was like an easy job, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was an easy job, you know, to do that. And the thing about with African-Americans in Cypress Gardens, African-Americans helped build Cypress Gardens, you know.
I was going to ask you about that Jim, a fellow named Jim Dole.
Yeah, Jim Dole's. And I interviewed his daughters, you know, two of his daughters and his son were still alive when I was working on the project. And I met them in Florence Villa, which was like Florence Villa was like the black section of Winter Haven, you know. So I went over to their house and interviewed them. She said, yeah, her dad was one of the workers out there. And there's a picture of him in there before it opened, you know, holding up a little sign. So he helped build it. Her brother worked there at the Terrace restaurant because they only hired black waiters. It was that time, you know, with Florida, you know, you only hire black waiters. That was a classy restaurant, you know. And so, yeah, so her dad did do that. And they were the first African-Americans to visit Cypress Gardens in the I think it was like 1942, like on Easter Day or something. And they were in their Easter finery. And she still had the little suit that her brother wore that day.
Oh, my.
And she's pretty sure that Dick Pope, like, brought them out there himself. To come visit, you know. And this was a time, and she was telling me about this, and I'm sure you both know about this. Some of these attractions would have Negro Day, kind of like in Hairspray. They talk about that Negro Day, where blacks could go to these places like one time a year. And she said whenever they had Negro Day, her mom would take them places, you know, to go see these places.
Amazing.
You know, and Dick Pope was interesting because I think if he I honestly think he would have opened Cypress Gardens if it hadn't been segregation, because I think his travel, his open-mindedness, I think he would have done that. His right-hand man was a black guy named Sylvester, who was his right-hand man, you know, probably like butler, car driver and all this stuff. But he was really close to him, you know, and I think helped pay for the kids to go to college and stuff, you know.
And you said he was friends with the Disneys, too, which amazes me because they ended up being rivals. But back in the day, the different Florida attractions all kind of supported each other, didn't they?
Right. Well, what happened was with the Disney thing. Yeah, they did. Dick Pope was the one that really did that. Like on his brochures, he would say Cypress Gardens, blah, 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 10 miles from Silver Springs or however many miles it was, or 40 miles. Go see Silver Springs. He always advertised other places because he felt like if people could come to that area and know that there were multiple things for them to do, they would most likely come to Cypress Gardens and then go visit these other places. So what happened is it was Roy Disney came to Florida when he was looking for land, and he showed up, and this is the story that was told, that he came to Cypress Gardens and then went in Dick Pope's office and called Walt Disney and said, Walt, you won't believe it. There's a guy down here charging, at that point, it was like $2 or $3 a head for people to come see a garden. And the people are lined up outside the door. Mm-hmm. I think this area is a perfect area, you know. Mm-hmm. And yes, there's pictures of Dick Pope standing by an under construction castle at Disney World. Dick Pope had photographs of himself and his staff wearing Disney heads. They all have on these like Disney heads. At a board meeting, they welcomed Disney because they thought it was going to be helpful to them. And in fact, Disney actually pitched it that way. We're just going to do this. And, you know, this is going to be it. And, you know, we want to help everybody else. And initially it was helpful because Disney would have overflow, you know, when they opened and the overflow would go to Walt Disney. They would go to Cypress Gardens. They'd go to all these other attractions. So initially it was very helpful. But then Disney kept adding more and more worlds, you know, this world, that world. And they really wanted to get people to come there on their vacation and just stay there, you know.
Yeah, not going anywhere
else. That's what ended all these other attractions, you know. Yeah. Dick tried to counter that by having gigantic topiary things and, you know, bells and whistles, but it just wasn't couldn't compete, you know.
What was Cypress Gardens is only a few miles from the Magic Kingdom, and you've foreshadowed this, and I say what was Cypress Gardens, obviously, mm-hmm. it is no more. So does the downfall pretty much closely align with Disney World and the enormous theme parks, Ascension, you know, once you get Epcot and all that kind of stuff, I mean, Cypress Garden almost feels hokey.
Yeah. You know, all the attractions, Weeki Wachee had the same problem. Initially, they were getting all these overflow crowds. And then gradually, who wants to see human beings do things, you know? it comes down to that. Like when you can go to these artificial worlds and do all that.
Yeah, see cartoon characters.
And Weeki Wachee and Cypress Gardens are very human scale entertainment. You know, you would go out there and sit on the hill before they built their little platform for photographers. You would sit on the mm-hmm. hill there and watch a ski show, and then you'd walk around and look at the gardens and take a little boat through the canal. Yeah, and so they just couldn't compete with the electronics and all that stuff. People changed, I think, you know?
I wonder if TV played a big role in that too.
Well, I think TV probably did. TV, just people's changing, you know, interest and wanted to be entertained like on a grand scale, you know, with mm-hmm. rockets.
Well, that Epcot Dome goes in, or the, you know, the roller coasters. It, like you say, Cypress Gardens was an attraction of the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Right. That's the, you know, it's the difference between train travel and space travel, right? People are starting to get to Cypress Gardens and Central Florida on airplanes, not 1940s Chevys. So it's like you say, that human scale, it was not anything that was ever conceived in a world that could conceptualize what Disney World and the Magic Kingdom, let alone Orlando, you know, became.
What is it now? You mentioned it briefly, but what that area now is, it's Legoland, right?
It's Legoland, but they preserved the initial, those first acres that he bought are preserved.
Really?
Yes, and I haven't been back down there. That is preserved by the state. In the Florida pool, they actually refurbished it, apparently. You know, when I went down there, it was like behind a fence and mm-hmm. Broken apart. In fact, I got a chunk of the tile from there over here in my corner, you know, piece of the tile, you know, from the Florida pool, because it was falling apart, you know, and they did save it. And Legoland, the company that owns Legoland is, I think it's a Dutch, are they Danish? They might be a Danish company. They own, in Europe, they own other garden kind of things. So they were actually a pretty good fit to get it. They do have, like, apparently they have Lego Southern Bells, you know, they had Lego oranges at the unveiling, you know, when they did the unveiling, I was there, and they gave away Lego oranges, you know.
They don't taste as sweet, I bet, though.
No, not at all.
Before we finish up, I want to ask about Dick Pope Jr., who was a fairly significant figure in water skiing, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, he was. He was Dick Pope Jr. I didn't get to interview him because he passed away, you know, he was in the process of dying, really. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was a barefoot skier. He did barefoot skiing and skiing backwards and stuff. So yeah, he was a champion as well. And he had a sister who I interviewed, and also interviewed Dick Pope Jr.'s daughter and Julie Pope. And they were the ones that gave me a lot of personal photos from the family. But Dick Pope Jr. really, I think, wanted to keep Cypress Gardens going toward the end. And it just wasn't, the family couldn't come together on that. So yeah. I think that was hard. But yeah, he passed away before I got to meet him. But yeah, he was a very influential skier, you know, and his barefoot mm-hmm. skiing and stuff like that. In fact, I interviewed this guy named Bill Bell, who was he announced shows and stuff. And he did a show. He did it for me. He announced, you know, Dick Pope Jr. barefoot skiing, and he did his whole radio spiel, you know. It's so good. He was an older man, but he did it, and I was like, oh my god.
Lou Vickers has been our guest, second time she's been on the show. The first time was to talk about Weeki Wachee, this time Cypress Gardens. There are links in the show notes to her books on both. Lou, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you. This is fascinating. I loved it. Thank you.
Did you ever go to Cypress Gardens when it was Cypress Gardens?
No,
me
I never
either.
Went.
Yeah. Like I said, my parents went a number of times and remember it fondly. I had the water skis, but you know, I'm 48, so by the time I was going to Florida, even in the early 80s, it had long since, you know, we were going to Epcot, not Cypress Gardens.
Exactly. But I mean, it Disney World probably wouldn't be there if not for Dick Pope and Cypress Gardens.
Yeah. Welcome to Florida.
Welcome to Florida.